Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Couples Therapy. This is a very special slash terrible episode because Candace and I are about 7,000 miles apart. How far is Germany to New York City, Candace?
You got me.
We're about 7,000 miles apart. And I guess today we're going to be talking about long-distance relationships. So, Candace, what's happening in New York while I'm away?
It's gorgeous outside.
Tell me.
Beautiful, not a cloud in the sky, like 75 degrees.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's really nice.
It's always nice when I leave. All right, let's not podcast about the weather. The weather's what you talk about when you have nothing else to talk about.
Okay. I went to Dr. P this morning.
Dr. P is Candace's therapist. What'd she have to say? Wait, did you talk to her about me being away?
No, I didn't actually.
That didn't come up once.
No, I said something, Casey's in Europe. And she's like, he's gone? And I was like, yeah.
That was it?
That was it.
So she wasn't upset and you weren't upset that I was away?
Not in therapy. I had other fish to fry.
Well, let's start by letting everyone know. I'm in Europe right now, so I'm actually in Dusseldorf, and I fly back to New York City tomorrow, but I've been gone for, what, 5 days now, 6 days?
Something like that.
I left on Sunday, and today is Thursday, and this is probably the longest I've been away, certainly in 2018, right?
Yeah. But it's not that you were gone. The issue is that you were supposed to come back today.
I was supposed to come back today.
And then today you tell me you're not coming back till tomorrow. Now, most people
correct.
Would be like, oh, I mean, what's the big difference? 24 hours, who cares? Like, why pout about it? But it means this podcast is pushed and you're pushing me to come and I missed work to come down here. And then Francine has been counting down the nights. Every night she's like, 3 more sleeps, 2 more sleeps. And she's doing the math by herself, which is really weird. And last night she's like, 1 more sleep. Daddy's coming home tomorrow. Jumping around the house. Yay, yay. We're jumping. Daddy's coming home. Daddy's coming home. And guess who's going to have to fucking break the little girl's heart tonight? And be like, guess what? Your father's not coming home.
Well, me. I appreciate you being so gentle about it so I don't feel guilty. you have a way with words, honey.
Yeah, but I'm not as bad as I was before.
No, I know. And honestly, in your defense, and me being the villain in this situation, the bad part isn't even that I told you today that I'm going to be a day late. The bad part is that I've known for 2 days that I'm going to be a day late, and I didn't tell you till today. I'm sorry.
Why would you do that?
Because I knew you'd be mad, and I just didn't want to have you be mad at me. And I thought, why be mad at me today when she can just be mad at me tomorrow? Is that terrible?
You're probably right about that just because you know me. Because instead of me seething for 2 days, I'm now only upset for one. Because it's like, okay, well, fine. It's only 24 hours till he gets home. And but you knew you did wrong.
I did know I did wrong. So I'm making a documentary about Shawn Mendes, who's a musician. And it's tricky because he's sort of on tour. He's like running around Europe doing promotions for his new album. So I have to chase him around and try to make a doc. But that's why it's been 6 days or 5 days. And that's why I need one more day is because it's just, it's like a really kind of manic production schedule. Mm-hmm. But honey, this year has been like the least travel that I've done in the last 5 years.
That's why I can't get mad. Because it's like you really are making an effort, so I can't be upset. If you I would be upset.
And what I really wanted to talk about on couples therapy this week was the fact that my traveling and us being apart from one another was such an enormous point of contention, I think, for the entirety of our relationship, especially when I was at MIT, when I was living in Cambridge and you were living in New York City.
I mean, that,
just after we got married.
Mm-hmm. That well, I'm honey, still so, mad about.
We're supposed to like discuss it. This is couples
oh.
therapy. Yeah,
well,
you can't just
let me
be,
give the background. So,
well, don't use this as an opportunity just to tear me to pieces.
I'm not. I'm just going to give the very fair, like, this is your side, and this is what you thought, and this is what I thought.
Okay, why don't you just focus on what you thought, and then I can talk about what I thought.
Okay, I get pregnant super quick, right? So we had only been married 3 months before I found out I was pregnant, which means it was, like really fast. I was terrified of being pregnant, right? Which you were not sensitive about at all. You were like, why are you being such a baby? And I'm like, I'm scared of my whole life.
Easy.
I'm giving my side. You can give your side.
Okay.
You made me feel like I was being a baby and selfish for like being unsure about whether I was ready to have a child or not. And then you had already been accepted to this really amazing, once in a lifetime, prestigious opportunity, which was to be a fellow at the MIT Media Lab, which is a huge deal. And you were so excited about it. But the problem is, for the entire first trimester, and I was sick, I was nauseous, I was alone, I don't have family in New York, none of my friends had kids, I didn't have, like, Roy couldn't come over and, like, rub my head when I was puking at night. And every time I called you to, like literally bawling my eyes out, being like, I can't do this, you would react with like, you're being really selfish. This is a big opportunity for me. And why are you making me feel bad?
Honey, you're really vilifying me here.
That's what it was. And then the crazy thing is like a year later, you still would be like, I'm still upset that you never came to visit me in Boston. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry that I couldn't lift my head up off the couch. Anyway, so why don't you tell your story?
All right. Well, it was definitely, you had a super gnarly first trimester. And I have to say, like, now that we have Francine and I understand that stuff, I think a little bit better, I'm like super quick to acknowledge just how, like, you are sick every single day. It was really, really bad. But I think the difference with that is you make it sound like I was really apathetic, like I didn't care. And it wasn't that I didn't care about you being sick. The thing that I struggled with, and we've talked about this in real therapy, the thing that I struggled with was everything that was going wrong with you, from like a rash on your elbow to your morning sickness, everything that was happening to you was my fault. And I think you acted that way because it was the first time you were pregnant, and that's okay, that's natural. But you did, like, everything was my fault, and I had to be screamed at, and all of your lashing out was on me. And I think that in retrospect, or what we learned in therapy since then, was that it's okay for you to have expressed your frustrations, but they shouldn't have been directed at me, and I should have been far more understanding of how shitty you had it, instead of like internalizing all of that like negativity that you were just throwing on me.
Yeah, you weren't a very good sounding board. You were like,
I'm a good sounding board now, but
you are now. But back then, and this is the thing, is that's what I'm saying, is like, it was at the, although we had been dating for so long, on and
we
off,
were totally selfish,
we were
monsters,
selfish strangers, almost like we were best friends, but. You know, the minute somebody becomes your roommate, you start to learn all these things about them. And we never lived together prior to being engaged. You know, we never dated as a cohabitating couple. So throw in being pregnant and the physical shit that comes along with that. I mean, I didn't have a rash on my elbow. I had, what was it called?
Don't get too graphic, because it really is just, no, it's just disgusting.
It's the chicken pox for adults. What's it called?
Okay, it was gross. Like sending me pictures when I was in Boston.
It was incredibly painful.
It was so gross.
It was painful, Casey.
No, I understand.
I just wanted somebody to blow on my back. Just blow on it. And there was nobody around. It was me and my fucking dog.
And then, whatever.
It's fine. I'm not mad. I'm not like actually mad at you now.
No, but even
we've come
even
a long
now,
way, is what
even
I'm saying.
Even now, the way that you're describing it and the way that I think you're seeing it in your head is that I was this apathetic, I don't care kind of monster.
You didn't care. All you cared about was yourself and MIT.
It wasn't that I didn't care. It was that it was impossible to it was impossible for me, or I had a really hard time being empathetic when everything was taken out on me. For example, it wasn't my back hurts. It was like, fuck you, you monster, for not being here to blow on my back.
Yes, totally.
And everything was like, the selfishness was not a one-way street named Casey Neistat. The selfishness was a two-laned highway, and one direction was Casey and one direction was Candace.
Right, but you know how when, like, sitcoms or whatever, and the wife's pregnant, it's like, oh, honey, what do you need? Oh, honey, what do you need for that? And honey, and I felt like that was the time where I needed just to be as selfish as I could possibly be. Not just to be selfish, but, like, if there's a time that's forgivable. If I were pregnant right now, and you were traveling, or let's say I were pregnant, this is like this whole situation was right now, and I were pregnant with our second kid, and you were, you know, a 45-minute flight away on Boston.
This hypothetical makes me uncomfortable.
And okay, I was hysterically crying because I had, it's not scabies, what the fuck is it called?
Shingles.
Shingles, and was nauseous, and I couldn't do anything.
I've known that the whole time, by the way. I was just uncomfortable with that word.
Let's just say we've come a long way in our relationship right now. And I called you and I said, Casey, please, I need you. You would, without a doubt, and this is how far we've come. I also shouldn't keep saying this is how far we've come because it sounds repetitive, but you would, no doubt in my mind, that Casey Neistat right now would get on a plane and be like, guys, I'm so sorry. I have to go to my wife. She needs me. Back then, there was no way.
Yeah.
We hadn't adapted to each other yet.
That represents how far we've both come.
Yeah. Agreed.
You know, because right now you wouldn't, right now if you had a crazy rash and everything hurt or you were sick, you wouldn't be like, screw you, you monster. How dare you? I hate you.
No.
You'd be like, Casey, help me.
Yeah.
And that's what you were like back then.
Yeah, you're right.
And it was like just to unpack the selfishness a little bit, like, it was like the crowning achievement of my entire professional life being invited to MIT.
Yeah.
And I think the way that you, like, rebelled, or the way that you punished me for me not being more empathetic towards you or me not being there was you being very, like, blasé and not giving a shit about this huge achievement. So that muddied the waters, too. Like, that made it even harder for me to appreciate how tough of a time you were having. Because it was like, why isn't she showing me any, like, this is a big deal for me. Why isn't she being more supportive?
I mean, we basically just were in a really bad place for the first year of our marriage.
We hated each other.
God, I didn't. I was like, it's not exaggeration. Like, I love you and I loved you then, but I love you way more now than I loved you then.
But Candace, even if we zoom out from that year, the years prior, except for like the month of loveliness around when I proposed to you, like the years prior, we were at a constant, like constantly at one another's throats.
Totally.
And when we got married, that didn't change.
Nope.
It just meant we were trying to live together. You were sick and pregnant, and I was four states away.
Yep.
But I will say, no matter what you're working through in a relationship, if there's distance between the two of you, it exasperates any frustrations you're having. And I say that generically. That's not a Casey Candace situation. I don't know how anyone deals with having real distance. Because when you have to resolve problems and there's space between two people, that's an incredibly difficult thing to overcome. That's why I like tiptoe. Whether I'm traveling for like a one-day engagement in Pittsburgh for speaking, or I'm on tour with Shawn Mendes for a week in Europe, I am so careful in how I talk to you, because anything that's misinterpreted or any fights that we may stumble into, they're so hard to resolve when there's this much space between us. Hey, I thought of something funny yesterday when I was thinking about couples therapy.
What?
Imago.
Oh my God.
Do you remember that?
That was so fun / the weirdest, most forced experience ever. So when Casey and I eloped the first time, and my mom was like,
wait, give a date.
2000, May 31st, May 25th, 2000. Five?
Okay, we had known each other for a month. We fell madly in love.
Yeah.
And I was like, Candace, let's get married because this is it forever. And we did, and her parents flipped out. And that was like when Candace says when we eloped, that was it. This wasn't when we actually got married. This was like two idiots doing something stupid that we then annulled and then properly got married 8 years later. Okay, back to your story.
So my mom thought, well, since these guys don't know each other that well, I'm going to sign them up for some like couple retreat in the Catskills so that like they can get a jump start on like emotional bonding, which was the worst idea that could have happened. Because
didn't
Casey,
your parents do this same?
My parents had just done it. And so she was like all into it and like, you have to do it. And I'm like, Mom, we're not like middle-aged and somebody cheated on each other. It's like we're getting...
What was the... Honey, what's that show on Netflix about the cult in the Midwest? Wild Wild Country.
Well,
yeah. Okay, so this program that Candace isn't doing a very good job of describing that her parents sent us to is like a weird cult, kind of like sit in a circle, follow these rules. It's not like going to a counselor who talks you through your marriage. It was
no,
like,
there were probably 10 couples, and it took place in this other couples who were like lead therapists, who were like Imago qualified therapists. I can't believe you remember the name. And we had like a schedule, like you had to be there at 8, and from 8 to 8:30 it was one talk, and the next thing you watched a video, and then you had to go around and like put your head in your partner's lap and act like you were a baby, and then you had to like bring pictures of yourselves when you were young. So like, this is what I want you to think of Casey as next time you get mad at him. He's just this innocent little child. Needless to say, after day one, we decided to get blackout drunk.
You should put some color on day one. What about the fact that like five times throughout the session that had like 15 people or 20 people in it, five times you and I got in a fight in the session, ran out of the house. They had to interrupt the entire session so we could be counseled privately by these people who were not doctors. They're just these kooks that lived in the Catskills and did these courses probably to make money. Like, I mean, they cared about it, but they weren't very good at it.
No, and
we were like, we were train wrecks.
Every other couple was like, really, like they had been married for 20 years and someone cheated, or they were on the verge of the divorce and this was the last thing because they had three kids together. And we were like, we got married.
We've known each other for a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were the youngest people there by probably 20.
I
was 24. Candace was 27.
I felt bad for the people there. Like I think they thought we thought it was a joke. And some people were like, wow, I'm really impressed that you're doing this. And we're like, mm-hmm.
Okay. So the first day's over.
Blackout drunk. Whiskey drunk. Like Jack Daniels the whole night at some local honky tonk.
We go to this crazy honky-tonk bar. I just remember leaving the car in the parking lot and walking back to the bed and breakfast. And we were like kids. We were like stupid early 20s, just like idiots. Like neither of us drink much now. We were blackout. Like I remember Candace, we got back to that house. It was not in a hotel. It was like a bed and breakfast. It was somebody's house
somebody's
we were
house.
Staying. And just rifling through their kitchen looking for food.
And
then
and
we
I
made
woke
it
up
into
the next morning with like, cuts all over my leg because I guess I shaved the night
no,
before.
No, you shaved, honey, you shaved my legs.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember what the circumstances were, but
Candace
shaved my legs, and then Candace had gotten, she had fallen on the walk home because she was so drunk in gravel. And it's the middle of August, so we show up the next day, and I only had shorts with
yeah,
me.
With
so we sit down
legs.
In my. My right leg is shaved, and Candace has two bloody, bloody knees and skinned hands. So we're sitting around, it's all these,
and we probably stunk of day-old whiskey.
Yeah, it's all these old gray-haired people, and they're all smiling with this like whimsical, stupid look on their face because they probably had sex the night before for the first time in 5 years. And Candace and I are in there. I think I had a black eye. I had one shit. Do you remember?
You
punched me. Yeah, you punched me. Not a domestic violence situation, boys and girls. I'm sure it was like a, I bet you can't give me a black eye
yeah.
sort of thing. So we're sitting there. I've got a black eye, a shaved leg, and you have bloody hands and knees.
Oh, my God.
And we just reeked of whiskey.
And then we're like, we got to go. And they're like, are you sure? We're like,
Yeah,
bye.
we didn't make it through the day. We didn't. It was a 2-day course, and we didn't make it.
I remember the guy used to drink like this, and every time he did, you'd be like, get me out of here. You go...
It wasn't the guy, it was the woman.
I can't even do it.
Okay, let me describe to you how
this.
Let me describe to you. Let me describe to you how this woman drank. And I don't mean to be giving her a hard time, but she was like one of those people who was like mid to late 50s.
Curly,
who you
curly
could imagine
hair.
Seeing Yeah, you can imagine seeing her on local TV as like the sex expert. And you're just like, old lady, please stop talking about sex. Please, I can't handle this anymore. She's like spiritual and like doesn't talk to you unless she has her hand on your shoulder. That's what she was like. And she had a water bottle the entire time. And every time there was a moment of silence, a pause in conversation, she would take a sip. And how she would take a sip is she'd take the water bottle, and instead of pouring it and drinking it, she would lock her lips around the edge of the water bottle so it was an airtight seal, and then suck the water out of the bottle. And it was very like, it looked like, what's the PC? It looked like she was performing fellatio. She was like giving the bottle a blowjob. And it was the most disturbing thing. It was just the entire time. And nobody else saw it but Candace and me. So it was just like this peak of discomfort and laughing at each other.
Oh,
couple
God.
Of idiots. Idiots.
Oh, Imago. No offense to anyone who Imago has worked for. I just think it was a little premature for us.
Yeah, God bless you. I hope it works for your relationship. I would stop short of recommending it, though. I don't... No part of it really blew my mind.
No, listen, guys. You get a therapist who can talk to you one-on-one. Because some guidebook that somebody trains with and then tries to teach you those lessons just is not going to work.
So I asked, when did I ask you about a therapist? Last week, honey?
Yeah, I have the names of two.
So I've never seen a therapist on my own. I go with Candace to Dr. P, who's more her therapist, and Dr. P sort of helps us. But I've kind of been like in the midst of Freak Out City, oddly enough, not with anything personally, just with like trying to figure out my own priorities, like a lot of weird existential shit. And I think because of this podcast and reading like all of the comments that stirred up around mental health, I, for the first time ever, I kind of want like, I mean, what I really want is like a business advisor, but what I think I really need is an actual therapist. So... Well, I haven't done it yet, but I'm thinking about it. Do you have advice for me, honey?
Shocker.
Why do you say that?
Because you were so because I'll tell you why.
Anti is not fair. I was never against it.
No, but you were very suspicious of anybody who needed help, who couldn't do it on their own. Like since I met you, you're so positive and upbeat and like, just do it. Like, you just do it. Just make it happen. If something's not working, then you figure out how to fix it and you fix it and you move on. And I think the older you get, I mean, that's very good advice, right? Like, just do it. But then there is a time there are times in your life where self-motivation isn't enough and you get a little bit confused. And I think you're kind of there. You have a lot going on. I think you just need to hash it out with someone who's not me.
I've never felt so confused.
Yeah. And confusion causes anxiety, and anxiety can cause you to feel blue.
Yeah, it's manifesting in weird ways. Let me break it down. It's like I have all of these gigantic priorities right now in my career, and this isn't a complaint, but as you sort of progress in your career, you find more and more success, which I'm very fortunate to have done, you get more and more opportunities. And I think because when I was young, I struggled so much and I had no opportunity, I would jump at anything. Like I'd make movies for free, I'd direct commercials, any opportunity I would seize, that I've sort of conditioned myself to embrace every opportunity and never say no. And now, to use a Gary Vaynerchuk word or term, I'm like drowning in a tidal wave of opportunities and I just keep saying yes. And then there's this other weird thing, which like, a 20-year-old Casey could never imagine. Like, all I really want to do is be home with Candace and baby and make videos. So, like, I need someone smarter than me to tell me it's okay to say no. I need someone smarter than me to tell me, like, it's okay to prioritize things and to say no to opportunities and pass things over to give more time and more focus to the things that matter. That sounds so naive and, like,
it's not naive. It's
platitudinal.
Like, no. It's a big problem with you. You do say yes to everything. I mean, even with like speaking engagements, you talk to me about it and you're like, I just feel irresponsible not taking it and it's an opportunity. And I'm like, yes, but then you're miserable and you're flying again and you call me from wherever you are and you're like, I just want to be home. And, you know, you enjoy the speaking part, but there's one or two days before and one or two days after that's taking over your life. And you have to decide, if you want to say yes or no. But in any case, what can we talk about a personal assistant? Why can't you just suck it up and get one?
Well,
or it's not a personal assistant, like someone who can make the intelligent choices for like what emails get passed on to you. I see you sitting there with 3,000 emails every night and I'm like, what are you even doing? You shouldn't even be, half the people shouldn't even have access to your email.
I know, given he's 19 and I generally avoid advice from 19-year-olds, but Sean does not do email and I had him break it down for me and I think he's got it right. I think if I could get email out of my life, that would be a big, that would do a lot. I just don't, I'm just a control freak. I don't trust anybody.
Okay. So Dr. P actually today talked to me about me being a control freak at work. And she's like, you know, what's your frustration at work? I said, it's just not moving fast enough. And like, you know, I don't want to be overambitious. That's not who I am. But at the same time, like some things take too long and it's frustrating. She's like, what's slowing it down? And she had me break it down. It's because I couldn't let go. I didn't want anyone to make any mistakes. And that's just like, you won't grow unless you let go in your world and in my world. What's the worst that can happen? An email slips through?
You know what? One thing though, maybe we should shelve this for next week because this is a bigger conversation. I gotta get out of here. The tour bus is gonna leave without me. But I've gotten much, much more comfortable with kind of being a jerk. Like, I don't know if you remember, but it used to be a big concern of mine that like everybody likes me and that's a lot of effort and a lot of energy and a lot of superficiality. And I think in the last couple of years, I've just been like, I just don't care. Like the people that I care about and the people that I love, I know that I'm a good person towards.
Yes, but Casey, I'm sorry, cause you're rambling. I see where you're going with this. And the point is that you're in a position where you don't have to be the jerk. Someone can be the jerk for you. I don't know how long we've been recording for, but I do have some questions from the voicemails.
Honey, you might have to do this without me. I mean, I have to go. All right, boys and girls, Candace is going to handle the Q&A this week. I'm curious what she's going to say. It's going to make me listen because I have to leave or I'm going to be stuck in Dusseldorf for another day. Honey, I miss you, and I'll see you very soon.
Okay, love you. Will I see you soon?
Well, if I can get off this podcast, I gotta get out of here.
Okay, just try to make it home before everyone's asleep tomorrow.
All right. Good luck answering these questions. Okay. Bye.
Ciao.
Honey.
Bye. Okay, so we have some questions, and I'm a little nervous to do this all by myself, but Jared asks the following.
Hey, Candace. Hey, Casey. Jared here. I know that even though you guys argue sometimes about your careers, you're definitely very supportive of each other and you want each other to succeed. It's something very admirable. But my question is, have either of you in your relationship or previous relationships attempted to deter the other's pursuit of success or had that happen to you? Thanks, guys. Really love the show.
Hey, Jared. No. And I think if I were dating, married, or even friends with someone who attempted to deter my pursuit of success, I would drop them like a hot motherfucking potato.
Hi, my name is Elliot from Knoxville, Tennessee. And this is actually a question for Candace. Candace, Casey has always talked about in his vlogs how he had, you know, kind of a grand vision for himself. Maybe he didn't know exactly what that was, but he always expected very much of himself. When you guys got together, did you have that kind of a vision for him and for yourself and for you guys together? Or were you just kind of winging it? I think me and a lot of people are kind of curious. Thank you.
Well, when we got together, and I think that Casey won't have a problem with me saying this, there's a saying where he didn't have two pennies to rub together, was kind of true. But that didn't ever bother me. I always knew that Casey had ambition, and whether that meant like financial security didn't really matter to me. All I cared about was that he had passion about what he was doing and that he wanted to be the best at whatever it was he did. So, yeah, I recognized that immediately. And that's actually one of the reasons I was mostly attracted to him. I found it really hard when I was dating to find anybody that could match his ambition. And that's super sexy. So I supported him and I trusted that he would be able to do whatever he put his mind to.
Hi, Candace and Casey. I have a question for you after episode 3. You mentioned that before Francine, Candace was a spoiled brat who threw tantrum and got babied by people around her. And Casey was a heartbreaker who always walked away when things got hard. So at the time, what was it about each other that made you guys stay together or at least always came back to each other throughout all these years?
I mean, besides the fact that we were incredibly physically attracted to each other, which is always a good reason when you're in your 20s to get back together with somebody. But I wish Casey was here to answer this too. But for me, it was like, I think he shares this sentiment a little bit, but we just both wanted to crack the other one. Like, I knew I could crack him. I just didn't know how long it was going to take. And he knew he could crack me and he didn't know how long it was going to take. So I was spoiled, but I think he knew that he could break through that. And he was a heartbreaker, but I sort of always knew that he wouldn't be one forever. And that ultimately, at some point in our life, we would find each other at the right time, when the time would be right for both of us. And I don't think either of us wanted to give up because, I don't know, there was just, my sister always says that our stars were aligned somehow and there was just no way we weren't ever going to end up back together. And that's what she would say to me when I would call her bawling every time we grew up. She's like, Candace, come on. One day you guys are going to get married. One day you're going to be together. So just, you know, chill.
Hi, this is Anna from Germany. And I was wondering, since a lot of people say that, especially in your 20s, while you're still trying to figure out what you want in your career and in life, and you have both worked really hard on your respective careers, do you think that if you two had stayed together from the first time you got together and you never broke up in between, do you think that that would have been beneficial to each of you pursuing your goals and to your personal growth? Or do you think it would have actually hindered it in some way? And were your careers ever in some way a reason or a cause for a breakup?
Definitely a hindrance. I think that time apart from each other allowed us to focus on ourselves. And when we did break up, the best way to deal with a breakup is to throw yourself into your work. So you don't think about relationships. You don't think about the boy or the girl. And I think it really pushed us. It forced us to only think about work. And if we had only been googly-eyed for each other for 8 years, I don't think that either of us would have been where we are today.
Hey, Candace and Casey, who's a better cook?
Oof, that's a tough one. Casey's like a short order cook. Like, he can make pancakes and eggs and stuff, but the minute he tries to get fancy, we have a joke where he's like, I'm going to put a little bit of raisins in your smoothie, or I'm going to put some paprika in your oatmeal. He just destroys it. And me, I just let him do what he wants to do. I'm not a very good cook. Well, that was short because it was just me and we didn't have Casey jibber jabbering for 60 to 70 to 80% of the response. But don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Anchor, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. And we love the reviews because I personally like them because most of them, if not all of them, are super positive. So it's a change. Thanks so much for that. And don't forget, if you want to make your own podcast, Anchor is pretty easy to do that with. So try them out. And I also think we should try a hashtag. I'm scared to commit, but maybe just hashtag couples therapy and we can blow all the other people that use couples therapy hashtag out of the water. We can try it out. Okay. Bye.